This is a lesson that is very unique. I would might even argue to you this might be the only time you will ever step into a Reformed Baptist church and hear a Sunday school lesson like this. I'll admit I was even having second thoughts this week as I was going through this. Much of this study, I think, has been good, walking through some of these practical areas. And some of this, I don't know. We're going to see how this lesson goes in particular today because it's very, very, very interesting. I think some of this might have rooted itself in sitting around thinking of ideas and turning to my co-elder and saying, hey, do you think we can pull this off? Do you think we can do a lesson on this topic? And sometimes I'll do that. Sometimes I'll grab a shirt and a tie and, you know, it'll be kind of an odd-looking combination, and I'll look at my wife and I'll say, hey, you think I can pull this off? You think this will work? And maybe one person can, and I think that's what happened with this one. So we'll see how this goes, but just to start off, if you're looking for a set of rules, if you're looking for perhaps this is the exact way that you need to fold your napkin and the knife is going to always go on the right, the fork is going to go on the left, or if you are looking for me to, you know, describe which is better, the French set of table manners or the American set of table manners, you're going to be greatly disappointed because we will not be going into such peccadilloes. If you're also looking for some encouragement as you desire to push your idiosyncrasies on other people and try to push upon them these rules that you know are right because you read them in a book or because your grandmother raised you that way, you're going to be disappointed as well. My goal here, though, is to be a reminder. This is something that likely has been understood more in times past and by some is been forgotten in this idea of manners and whether or not they should be taught to children. We won't just be dealing with children. We're going to deal quite a bit at the beginning with the whole idea of how we interact with other people and how we consider others to be more important than ourselves. And I think that's the root behind this, the foundation that we have. This is not just something that's just merely personal preference, but rather something that I believe that we can even go so far as to look at and find aspects of this rooted in the moral law of God. That said, we're not going to get to a whole lot of specifics in that situation if I'm looking at it that way. We're looking more of it as a broad, general, theological and philosophical and practical idea of considering this topic. Not teaching on this topic because this is something I have mastered in my own life. Not teaching on this topic because this is something I have mastered in my own family. I would give this argument to you that I would imagine that I believed I had a better understanding and control of this before I even had kids. And I would have believed that I thought I knew exactly how kids should have been raised and taught these things in times past. It was ignorance. I was sure of it at the time. It's so easy to sit in a restaurant, right, and to look over there and to see someone having difficulties or even worse. I would at times be out to eat and just hear a whimper or a cry from a child and just couldn't believe how can you even bring a child like this into a restaurant and ruins this serene environment. And I'm amazed at how I have been changed by having my own children to, it's kind of weird when you don't. It's weird when you're in a church service and there's no whimper, there's no noise. And I can tell you sitting in a restaurant, obviously I don't like sitting behind the two-year-old that's throwing food at the other table, but to hear a baby cry oftentimes is soothing. It's cute. It's not something that is disturbing to my restaurant experience. So going forward, though, this idea of teaching manners, is this something that we should be teaching to our children? Is this something that we should just wait for their heart to be changed and they just follow after it on their own? Or is this something that requires a certain amount of didactic teaching? This is what this needs to look like. And even in that teaching, are there certain areas that we need to be cautious of as people that are can be given toward legalism? We'll start off and argue that children should be taught manners. If you've read the book, Disciplines of a Godly Family, this is an argument that they make. About half of what I'm going to say comes out of that book, and we'll walk through some of their their ideas as we get through farther into this, but here's the first point that they make. They say this: children are rude because they are so naturally egocentric. It is their needs, their comforts, their feelings that they demand be met, usually at the expense of weary parents. Of course, self-centeredness is natural, expected behavior in infancy and tolerable in toddlers, but it becomes downright unbearable in school-aged children. Proper manners can be a most effective tool in teaching children that they are not the center of the universe. And as realization grows, they will be well on their way becoming civilized rather than savage. So when looking at this idea of even teaching manners in the first place, we need to understand why it is that people have bad manners. Why is it that someone would seek to put their desires and their needs and their wants over someone else's? And it comes down to their heart. The truth is that we're natural born sinners. We're sinners who seek our desires and our wants more than other people. So in teaching this, it's not just about having this list that comes out of a book so that we can make sure that we check off this list, but rather these are opportunities for instruction, and they're reminders to us all of our own selfish nature. Even those of us that are converted, you are still fighting and dealing with this old man that says, my way, not God's way, my way over someone else's way. We're natural-born idolaters, as we've said many times before, and we place ourselves as sovereign, king, and ruler, and then it manifests itself, it works itself out through the actions that we do. So we need to understand the heart of the problem, and then we'll walk through some practical aspects of this. Here's another good quote from the book. They say, manners are about respect, and thus are rooted in the Christian ethic modeled by Christ. My life for your life. Self-sacrifice, therefore, is the heart of the matter. The Apostle Paul held up the example of Christ as the rationale for being considered to others when he told the Philippians, each of you should not only look to your own interest, but also the interest of others. Your attitude should be the same as Christ Jesus. And so I want to make an argument here, and this, you can think through this, because this isn't a therefore exactly says this, but I'm taking this from what I believe to be the proper understanding of the moral law of God, and we talk through that more explicitly as we walk through the Ten Commandments. But I believe that the basics of following after these why you would even follow after manners, why you would consider someone else more important than yourself, has its basis even in the law of God, where you would consider someone else's interests, someone else's desires, someone else's comfort more important than yourself. And I think if we walk through many of these, that we'll understand that. Why is it that you would not sit at the meal and chew in such a way that the entire table the whole time can see all the contents in your mouth? Well, because it gives the other people a very uncomfortable dining experience. No one wants to watch you chewing and chomping in that way. So I am not thinking of that person in a way that I should. Rather, I'm dismissing them. I'm not even considering them. And so this idea of taking others into consideration is something that needs to be taught to children. And it's not something that's going to be given to them just in one fell swoop. This is going to be something that is taught gradually in different times. But we need to keep an understanding of the heart of the matter. But at the same time, we're not only looking at the heart, we're looking at how this manifests itself, how it needs to work itself out in our lives. I want to give some examples from Scripture where we see, these aren't necessarily manners, but they are examples of when someone had a right to do something or not do something, and yet that person chose to do it anyway for the good of someone else. And we'll see that some of these are not the easiest of tasks. We see the first example I want to give is of Paul when he has Timothy circumcised. We see that in Acts 16:2-3. Paul wanted Timothy to accompany him. He took him and circumcised him because of the Jews who were in those places, for they all knew that his father was a Greek. He had no requirement to go and to follow after this ritual. He had no necessity as a Christian that required him, I am compelled, I have to follow after this. But in a desire to share the gospel with others, in a desire not to have something that is directly in the way as a stumbling block, he went forward with this and went through with this. That said, you can go on to Galatians and see Paul where he says that he would not allow Titus to be forced. And so we have, this is where we have this idea of we need to make a distinction. There is the idea where you will do certain actions and activities for the purpose of someone else's good, for the purpose of furthering and sharing the gospel. But then when you begin to make those actions that are not the gospel part of the gospel, that's where the wall has to be put up. And that's where the legalism begins to step itself in there. And this is an area which can go that direction. This idea of manners, we can begin to make those this area of this is a definition of sanctification. Or this is a picture, probably wouldn't verbally say that it's a measure of justification, but implicitly we can go that direction in having an emphasis upon that it is unhealthy. And I would argue that Paul makes an argument in Galatians that we are not to add to the gospel anything that is not of the gospel. That's why you have Paul doing these. When you first look at them, it looks like there's a confusion. Why would he have to do one thing here and do another thing here? Well, you have them in the Galatians trying to put the Mosaic code upon people, trying to say, if you are going to be a Christian, you have to hold to the entirety of the Mosaic covenant, or you, if you're going to be a super Christian, if you're going to be someone who is more elevated in your understanding of God, you need to be holding to these truths. We have another instance where Paul seems to follow similar actions. He goes through with his purification ritual in Acts 21, something that to follow after in and of itself isn't wrong. It would be wrong if you begin to make it a matter of a gospel issue, but for the purpose of the gospel, he would make others more important than himself, and he would break down these barriers, break down such walls. I believe Paul summarizes his hermeneutic in doing this, his foundation, why he acts the way he does in 1 Corinthians 9, 19 through 23. We see this. For I am free from all. I have made myself a servant to all, that I might win more of them. To the Jews, I became as a Jew, in order to win Jews. To those under the law, I became as one under the law, though not being myself under the law, that I might win those under the law. To those outside the law, I became as one outside the law, not being outside the law of God, but under the law of Christ, that I might win those outside the law. To the weak, I became weak, that I might win the weak. I have become all things to all people, that by all means I might save some. I do it all for the sake of the gospel, that I might share with them in its blessings. So what he did here is he made himself a servant to other people for the sake of the gospel. I believe this is a good pathway. That's why I've gone this direction of kind of seeing how is it that we even approach this subject. And seeing how Paul behaved, I believe, is a good one, because the first thing we can do here is just say this isn't just about someone's preference. We need to be taking other people into account and not just, well, you have your way, I have my way, you have your way, but thinking more circumspectly, yourself as a Christian, how is it that I should be behaving, and how is it that we instill these ideas in our children even at a young age? Just one example that I remember reading a book that I really enjoyed. It's by Maybelle Williams, and it's called Have We No Rights? The book's about 80 pages long. I think you can find it on Kindle for free. And she is a missionary that she might have gone with the China Inland Mission. I know in the book she had many quotes from Hudson Taylor's book. And she talks about this idea of have we no rights, and she walks through this idea going forward as a missionary in the many areas and aspects of her life that she had to lay things down, and areas in which she saw people that went into missionary work and had not done such things, people that were not willing to make changes in how they ate We're not willing to make changes in how they dressed. We're not willing to make changes in how they ordered their life for the purpose of sharing the gospel with other people. And one of the examples is of a young woman who had gone there. She was going to work with some young children. Some of these areas where people will go, sometimes it is a lady has an opportunity to share the gospel with children or even with the ladies in ways in which a man wouldn't. Saudi Arabia would be a great example. If I were just to walk into Saudi Arabia and think that I could have a Bible study and have women sitting around me, that would not be realistic. It would be a chance where we would need a woman to be there to be able to share the gospel with those ladies, just given the nature of the society. Well, there's also other aspects that influenced the missionary, and one of them was how they dressed. And to us, it might just seem ridiculous, but if you were to go to Yemen and you wanted to go and share the gospel with people as a lady, you would wear sleeves. You would not wear, I don't even mean like short sleeves, you would not have your elbows exposed. That may make no sense to you, but as someone who is there, you have to take into account the understandings of the people there, and for you to dress in that way is going to set the people in a way that is very uneasy. They're going to look at you and see, this is an immoral woman. That makes no sense to you. Well, but to understand from their perspective, it is. And there was a young lady that Maybelle Williams talks about that disregarded all of that. She said, look, this is a modest shirt. I can wear this. I can dress this way. I don't have to cover my head. Why should I? I don't mean wearing a burqa, but even just they would wear kind of a veil that covered their hair and their ears. And she just went on anyway, and she found that none of the mothers were any longer allowing the children to go and sit in front of her because they looked at her and they thought, well, she's dressing like an immoral woman. So just as one example, that you would have this idea that I need to make certain changes here in what I do. So I want to make an argument here that this can have its basis in the moral law of God. It's just not mere preferences, but it has its basis rather in the moral law. I was happy to see that even the Reformed Baptist preacher, Albert Martin, taught a sermon, and he made this argument as well. So this has been taught in a Reformed Baptist church even as a sermon, and he made this argument here very eloquently, that the manners themselves have their basis, not just in mere preferences, but rather in the moral law. And we're speaking of this in general, not in specific. So we're not exegeting a specific, you know, scripture that tells you how to do this or that, but rather we're looking at them in general. And it helps us there to understand, because when you're dealing with someone else, you're dealing with someone who is made in the image of God. And when you're treating someone in a way that is not taking them into account, what you're doing is you're not treating your neighbor as yourself. You're disrespecting someone who was made in the image of God. So there's times at which I would argue that you end up violating the moral law of God. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. We see this picture of love in 1 Corinthians 13. Love is patient. Love is kind. Does not envy. Does not boast. Is not arrogant. Is not rude. Does not insist in its own way. Is not irritable or resentful. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, and endures all things. And So as the closing here of this aspect of just understanding the foundation of why we would even go into this, I believe if we focus on this part, it does not insist on its own way, is would help us to see how it can be loving to have manners for other people, to take other people into account, even in times where it's not a direct violation of a law of God. So let's talk about training children. We'll just look at one aspect of it. We'll talk about training children to be gracious. We're going to emphasize this idea of thankfulness in respect to children's. And Hughes says this, they say, manners are not a wooden list of rules regarding the use of a right fork or word or posture. Rather, its courtesy is flexible, subject to the needs and feelings of the people that are involved. And so it's this idea of on the basis of what we just walked through, we're taking others into account. We're making others more important than ourselves. Let's walk through some practical ways that the authors mentioned that we can do this. Number one, and this is a great teaching opportunity regularly as you're doing this, is number one, you're teaching children they're not the center of the universe. They're not the center of the universe. God is the center of the universe. Everything they have, the life itself, is a gift of God. So the scriptures command all God's children to be grateful, people who are perpetually give thanks. Continuing, they say, self-pity and egocentricity are telltale signs of self-centered, grouchy heart. Manners move us from self. And we'll go on to argue later on that these are commands. You're commanded to be grateful. And God is going to judge people for being ungrateful. So it's not just a matter of whatever, if it's in your heart, then it's there, or if it's not, but there is a consequence if it is there or if it's not. It's going to manifest itself in certain ways within your life, but it being there or not being there is of great importance. It needs to be emphasized. Number two, they make this point. They say you should help your children to discover that courtesy brings joy. We can find great pleasure in helping those in need, whether it's an elderly woman needing assistance across the street or a person seated across the dinner table whose glass needs filling. And this is an important aspect of it. It's not just do this right now because I said it or you're going to get disciplined, but rather there is an aspect of this that you can learn that it is you were made to live this way. Just as with any aspect of the moral law, you were made for the purpose of living in a way that is kind and loving to other people. And so when you live that way, it is going to bring you joy. Now, it may not always make you most comfortable at this moment. It may not make your life the most easy, but that's not always the definition of joy. Right? I think we could argue that Christ had joy throughout his ministry, and I would argue that even on the cross, but I wouldn't argue that that was always something that was happy, that he was always smiling at all times, or certainly not that it brought all kinds of comfort. I mean, so that we have a misunderstanding of what joy would be. Thirdly, and I think this is a big one, we need to be those to our children who set examples by being gracious ourselves. How oftentimes are we people who are very ungrateful? I would argue that I catch myself in this often. There's probably many other times when I don't. How often are we ungrateful in our lives? How often do we sit there and focus on all of these areas in a way in which shows that we completely forget all the ways in which the Lord has blessed us previously? Don't ever neglect this aspect of instruction to your children, the importance of you displaying that which you desire to be in your children. And I would encourage you to be mindful of this. And this is something that I'm regularly reminded of in my own life, is these ways in which I'm regularly falling short. I'm saying this over here, and then over here I'm not being consistent in my own life. As we've said many times, there's more that is caught than is taught. And so we need to be, even making ourselves mindful of this in the first place is the first key to us even displaying it in our own lives, and then thereby giving us a better opportunity to teach it even to our children. Fourthly, understand that teaching is ordinary. It's just something that is regular. It's something that can be done, discussed, a regular part of life, something, it's one of those as you go through lives, as you go through. So is this something that should ever be done out of compulsion? Is this something that you should require of your children? Should you require them to show good manners? Should you require them to say please, thank you? There's some who would disagree, but I would argue that even those that disagree are arguing more from a philosophical level than rather even a practical one. And this is because this is what I see. When someone has a 2-year-old child, and the 2-year-old child is given a gift or they're given something, and what do you say to the 2-year-old? You say thank you. Good, thank you, right? Well, am I to believe that this 2-year-old is actually expressing this deep heart of gratitude at that time as they are expressing this truth? No, I don't think they are. And I don't think that's really the purpose of that, you're teaching the child, this is how you are supposed to act, even as at a young age like that. This is how we should act. We should be thankful people. And one of the ways in which you display thankfulness is by smiling at someone, looking them in the eye, and saying, thank you. And the only way that gets instilled in a child is if that is communicated to them. It's that way with many things. You're going to have to communicate it to them. You're going to have to display it to them when you do it. You're going to have to correct them when you don't do it. You're going to have to even correct the way they do it. Right? Because you have a young child, and they're not even looking at the person in the face, and you're having to teach them, no, you need to be respectful. Well, in their heart, are they really, is their focus really that? Well, no, it's not, because they're a young child, and they're having to be trained to work in these ways. So part of raising children, we already know this, is going to be emphasizing outside characteristics. It's going to be emphasizing behaviors that they do. You could argue against this, but you're going to end up contradicting yourself, I would argue. It's not wrong to emphasize the outside. It's wrong to emphasize the outside at the expense of the inside. All right? It's wrong if all you're focusing on is just these outward behaviors and you're never dealing with the heart. Because in that situation, you're never getting to the gospel. And you're giving a false sense of reality to yourself as a parent and the way you're even measuring this child's spiritual life. And secondly, you're not giving the child what they really need, which is the gospel. So it's got to go beyond that. And that's us understanding this first part of what we laid down here, which is understanding that we're fallen sinners in need of grace. The only way that we can be saved is by grace through faith. And that comes knowledge of the gospel. All right, you are saved by grace through faith, and that faith is in something. That needs to be communicated, not just a set of rules, not just making my parents happy. It has to go beyond that. So it is good, in a sense, that your child does something to make you happy. It is good, in a sense, that they do something for that reason. But if that's the only reason that they're doing it, that is not good. That is a great problem. I want to walk through a few passages that I want to argue to you that being grateful is something that is commanded in Scripture. There's many places we could look at. Here's just a few. Psalm 136:1, give thanks to the Lord, for he is good, for his steadfast love endures forever. That's a command. Give thanks to the Lord. James 1:2-4, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials in various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness, and let steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect, complete, and lacking in nothing. Continuing, Philippians 4:6, do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your request be known to God. So you're to be making requests to God in a thankful way. 1 Thessalonians 5:17-18, pray without ceasing, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. And again, Colossians 3:15, and let the peace of Christ rule in your hearts, to which indeed you were called in one body, and be thankful. These are commands that he's given. You're commanded in numerous places in Scripture to be thankful. Ephesians 5:17-21, therefore do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. Do not get drunk with wine, for that is debauchery, but be filled with the Spirit, addressing one another in psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, singing and making melody to the Lord with your heart, giving thanks always and for everything to God the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, submitting to one another out of reverence for Christ. And there's many more verses that we could discuss, but it's not just that you're commanded to do this. There's consequences if you're not thankful. When God's giving a command, he's commanding something to you, and to be obedient to it would result in blessing. To be disobedient to it would result in curse. Consequence would be a small way to say it, but Romans 1:21. This is a very serious passage if you remember this one, but it says, for although they knew God, they did not honor him as God or give thanks to him, but they became futile in their thinking, and their foolish hearts were darkened. And this is talking about humanity and their fallenness and not giving thanks to God, something that God was requiring of them, something that they should be mindful of and something that they should have done, something that I would argue in this passage they were doing fully cognizant of what they were doing, knowing, though their mind may have been suppressed in unrighteousness, their conscience may have been seared, they were intentionally violating the law of God in this way, taking the rain that the Lord had given them, taking the blessings that the Lord had given them, and not being thankful, all right? Always looking for, there's something else that I don't have. And the consequence of that is because they were idolaters. If you worship and serve anything other than the Creator, you're always going to be left wanting. You're always going to be searching after something else because you're trying to find fulfillment in something, which is the creation, which wasn't made to fulfill you in that way. It's not possible. God is the only one that can do that. So we need to be mindful of this. I believe we can make a good argument that being thankful is a requirement. I don't think it is wrong for you to require your children to act and be thankful in ways. Now, if your only idea and your only method of dealing with this is just going to be a spanking every single time the exact words thank you don't come out of the mouth, you're missing something there. I mean, there may be times where you have to deal with rebellion in certain ways, but some of these things may need to be dealt with in other ways. And one of the classic ways that I've dealt with it is if I have a child who's not being grateful and they're given something, it's very easy just to take that item back and just to give them a little bit of perspective. I would argue that's what God does many times to people, is that which they assumed they had, that which they thought was going to consistently be there, it would just be removed to give the people a better perspective. I believe that some of the times where I've been reminded of how much I'd been blessed and how much I should have been thankful are times in which I felt some kind of difficulty. It's then I remember, oh yeah, wow, it sure was nice to have a house that was comfortable that I could just go into, and now I don't have a house. Now I'm more thankful in thinking about the fact that I have a house, which I had just taken for granted because I had always just walked into a house and hadn't had a house destroyed by a big storm, which is something that happened to us. And it was a time of growing in our lives and a time in which I've remembered to be thankful of even having a house. But a main point we want to catch here is, remember, is that we need to be using opportunities to deal with the root of the problem. The root of the problem is ultimately in the heart. It's something that needs to be walked through and talked through. It's something that I want to argue is going to take time and effort. It's going to be something that to do this right is going to require that you have extra conversations. It's going to require that you work through things in ways that require more than just a letting something go or more than just giving a strict, okay, here's the rule and that's it. There's times to speak that way, but these other conversations need to be having, because this is something that I've tried to make the argument here. This isn't just how you live as a child. This is something that I believe gets at some root issues of Christianity, which is putting others over ourselves. I mean, you go through some of these rules you might have. Don't talk over other people. Why would I not do that? Well, because it's rude. I'm not considering this other person. Why would I not talk incessantly over other people and direct all the conversations at the dinner table to myself and whatever I want? Well, because I'm being selfish at that time. I'm putting all the emphasis and focus upon myself. Why would I not be someone who is boasting and bragging? Once again, we're getting at these things that are, okay, these are manners that we would often follow, but we're getting at a root issue is you're making yourself the center of the universe at that time. You're making yourself the epicenter. You are the most important. You are the center of the dinner table. You are the center of all conversation. And what you have there is you have sinfulness, and that needs to be something that is dealt with. That needs to be dealt with in the correction of the child. This is not how you need to behave. This is wrong. And let's face it, some children are going to need more correction in these areas than other children. To some, it's going to come easy. Some are just going to enjoy it and go along with it. Others are going to need more correction in certain areas. That doesn't necessarily mean, mark this, that doesn't necessarily mean that this child that needs less correction in this area is less sanctified than this other one over here. You have to be mindful. That's why these heart conversations are important, and the gospel is there, because you can have a child who is doing these things just out of a desire to make you happy and is completely unconverted and is lost, and they're making an idol out of being obedient to their parents. Now, that sounds weird. Maybe, you know, you might think, well, that sounds like one of the better idols. Well, maybe it might bring you comfort for a time in your life, but it is not good for that child, because that child is going to have to exist in a world in which you are not always by their side. And furthermore, that child is practicing idolatry at that time. They're not doing these actions out of a desire to please God or be obedient to God. They're doing these actions out of a desire just to please you. In closing, we'll spend this last time talking about, like, let's just think about manners and how they would affect themselves in a meal, and the importance of this. We see so many times in Scripture where this picture of a table that is there and the involvement in other people, and these are things that I would encourage you to have your children involved. And those of you that have younger children, some of you I know very well. So some of this you may have, you know, my own life coming out here, because some of you have older children and this doesn't even apply to you at this point. But to have them involved even in these little areas, to have them involved in this area, it's like, we have people coming over today. We have people that are going to come, and we're going to share a house with them. And so let's all be involved in this. It would be so much easier just to put on, and you may do this at times, I do this at times, but I would encourage you not to always do this at times and to do it less than you probably want to at times. But you may put on a movie and say, y'all just watch this video for a little bit and I've got to take care of this. That may happen in life, but I would encourage you to find ways to bring them in and say, we're going to have people that are going to be here today, and we're going to all participate, and we're going to help to put on something for them, and have the children come get involved. Have the children be setting the table. Have the children be getting things ready. Have the children begin to take this joy in this preparation of a meal. And you know what? Are they going to mess it up? Yes, they're going to mess up the deviled eggs. They're not going to look perfect. Are they going to, you know, make the pizza? If you made homemade pizza, are they going to make it just right? No, they're going to mess it up. They're going to rip a hole in the dough, and they're going to put too many onions in this spot, and it's not going to be distributed perfectly around. And that's something that you need to get over, all right? Because that's not what it's ultimately about. You're trying to go back to what we said earlier, is instill a joy, because there is a connection there that you want to make between, we did this for other people, and now I'm sitting at this table, and these other people are now enjoying it, and it's something that is fun. And I would encourage you for them to have this involvement and to see this preparation of food and to see others that are there, and then of course to learn how to act correctly when the others are there. We had an incident recently where we were staying in a hotel, and we usually stay in a hotel where there's a kitchen and a refrigerator, and you all know why we like those amenities. But this particular, for certain reasons, I had chosen this hotel that didn't have those, and it had this little refrigerator and this, maybe it's a little bigger, and then this little microwave. And so Janice was making bowls of soup for everyone, and so she'd pour some soup and heat it up and hand it to someone And one of my children was like, this is so sad. You know, she saw this, like we're sitting on the floor, sitting on beds, just heating up individual bowls of soup, and she missed that. She's like, this is not how this should be. This should be a meal, we're all sitting together, we're all, you know, we're all involved, and it's not that way. It's like, here, just go ahead and start eating. Let's just get this over with, because by the time we get to this sixth bowl of soup over here, then yours is going to be cold anyway. You might as well eat it now. And so that was something that I saw, like, yeah, that's good. I was happy to see that. I thought, well, yeah, that's good. You're beginning to see how there's a blessing to the people being together and people gathering together around a meal. And we see even those pictures pointing forward to the time and the fellowship that we'll have in heaven with each other and even with Christ. And so I would encourage you to have the family be involved in these things and have these conversations. It's easier just to let things go by and just, I can do this faster myself. Even if your goal was to just do this faster yourself, you will find if you have children that if you will take the time when they're younger, as they grow older, they can be very productive, and they can get a whole lot of stuff done way faster than you would ever be able to. And let's face it, as we get older, we may not have the same skills to get things done as we did when we were younger. And you are just missing out on a great blessing for yourself. If you just do everything yourself and don't involve them, you're missing out on these great teaching opportunities. That's what I would argue, to have these many, many different conversations. Practically, one thing that might hold us back from trying to share fellowship with others and being, you know, going to other people's houses is maybe, you know, the kids don't quite act right. Maybe I'm going to invite people to my house and the kids aren't going to act right. They're going to display bad manners. I've told them how to do this and what they should do, and then I'm going to have someone else in here and I'm going to be embarrassed. I would encourage you just to walk through that. Even those are good times to teach on manners. Even those are good times to teach on how they should be dealing with other people. Invite these other people in your house. Associate with them. Be around them. Fellowship with them. You know what? It's going to be embarrassing, and you already know it. So just accept that. Your children are going to embarrass you. So don't be surprised when they do. Just accept that they're going to, and then move forward and invite people in your house, because you're missing out on opportunities to fellowship with others, and you're also missing out on opportunities to teach others, because there's also another opportunity there when you have someone in and your child displays this negative behavior. There's even another person that's going to look at them and just be like, really? And so that's not necessarily a bad thing. We need to guard ourselves as parents of only seeking after our comfort. And then just seeking after our comfort in these areas, what can happen, though, is that we end up missing out on great opportunities for teaching, great opportunities for us to be blessed, and seeing other people. There's so many times when I've been invited to someone else's house, or they've come to our house, and I've learned from them. I've seen, wow, he does this with his kids, or she does this, and I never thought of it that way. And it's just a great blessing that you're missing out on. And the same thing with the children. In closing, here's one last quote that I kind of started here and I want to end here, because this is an important aspect for those of us that can be given towards legalism. But they say, manners do not make the man or the woman. The radical reorientation that says my life for your life can only come from the regenerating work of Christ, who instills his life and ethic in us. Nevertheless, manners teach the need and complement the character that Christ's life gives. Life that says my life for your life, for yours, are channels of God's grace to a needy world. And the way in which the Lord will work in someone's life many times will be that it's not like I just become a Christian now and now I get all the information. The Lord will use things that were taught to you prior to your conversion. So these conversations that you're having prior to conversion are important, because they're there and they'll be utilized even after the child's conversion. So I don't believe that this is just, well, we just need to wait until the child is converted. These are things I would argue you need to teach even beforehand. And just in the nature of how God has given us to raise children, I think it's just natural that they're going to be communicated that way, and that we should be intentional even in how we do this.